Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTLO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is calling from Halibut Cove in beautiful Halibut Cove, Alaska. Marion Beck is the daughter of Clem and Diana Tillion, and she's also the author of a new book called Salmon Patties and Rosehip Pie Cookbook, Art Food and the Coastal Life in Halibut Cove, Alaska. Marion, thank you for being on this here with me today.
All right.
First of all, can you paint me a picture of Halibut Cove?
Oh, well, it's an island in a cove, and the community's behind the island, so it has a natural harbor, and all the building is sort of perched around the edge of the seashore.
Did you grow up there?
I did.
What was it like growing up there?
Well, quite remote, actually. Very few people, 6 old bachelors, and later on people started to come, mostly as summer residents.
And when did you start the restaurant called The Saltry?
When did we start it?
Mm-hmm.
We opened in 1984.
Can you tell me about the process of building the float house restaurant?
Yes, it's the float house we actually put up on a dock. And so it's permanently affixed there. And it's quite a kind of an art dining sort of experience.
How many customers do you serve in a year on the average?
We are open only 3 months a year, and we serve about 110 people a day.
How did you get such good publicity?
How did we get the good publicity?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we were on Good Morning America and the Today Show and many other things when we first opened up, which really helped get the ball rolling. And I'm an artist, so I'm out in the world of art, and we've just been there a long time.
Seems like locally available food seemed to be a major part of the book.
It is a major part of the book. We are very much into purchasing locally and always have been since we opened and have a garden, and I'm quite interested in fish buying, and we're fishermen ourselves.
Tell me about poke, if you could, please.
Okay, it's actually called pokey, and it's a Hawaiian, kind of like ceviche, but it's a fish that's marinated in soy sauce and different sesame seed oil and such. And there could be like 45 different pokies in the grocery store that you would pick from at the deli counter. So it's just a marinated fish, raw.
Would you consider these difficult recipes?
Not at all. These are very simple recipes. My theory in cooking is really super clean food, and basically the key is a lot of chopping, a lot of different little ingredients.
How small do you chop?
Oh, depends, half inch, quarter inch, eighth inch, but it just means that you have a lot of different styles of ingredients in there, but they're all fresh. It's not a heavy food.
Is this a cookbook for somebody in Los Angeles where they may not be found as much locally available food?
Oh, I think in Los Angeles you could find some locally available food. Maybe not exactly like ours, but definitely that availability would be there.
Do you have any favorite recipes in the book?
I guess my favorite recipe is our chowder, our smoked sablefish chowder, and it's a really clean, clear broth chowder, super popular, and our next most popular is our smoked salmon pate.
Now, most cookbooks that I've seen feature full-color photos of the food. You've included something a little bit more inspiring.
Oh, my artwork. Yeah, the artwork in the narratives, I think it's a book about cooking and folklore and talking about your region. And so I wrote the cookbook so it tells a tale as you are reading the recipes.
Now, growing up with Diana Tillion, are you a big user of Octopus Ink?
I did not use Octopus Ink. I paint with oils. I'm a fauve, and probably one of my major influences in my art life was Alex Combs.
Tell me about Alex Combs, please.
Pardon me?
Can you tell me about Alex Combs?
He was a art professor at in Anchorage at the university there, the Alaska University. And he was into modern art, and I was probably a little more influenced with modern art and color.
I'll say there's a lot of use of color in your paintings.
Yes, there is. Yep. That's my signature right there.
What inspired you to cook?
I've always enjoyed cooking. I cooked growing up. My mom was a great cook, and she taught me how to bake bread and everything else, and I was always fascinated with it, and I ultimately got a degree in animal science, which was about the meat industry.
Are you what they call a plein air painter, or do you paint in a studio?
I am a plein air painter. I do a lot of my sketches are just in pencil, and then I do a small painting in my studio, and then I turn it into a big painting. And a lot of times I just paint in the field.
This must have been fun being on Good Morning America. What was that experience like?
It was fabulous. The commentator was Irma Bombeck, and she was really spunky and very much really was flattering about our invention, which was highly unusual at the time, and it was an uplifting experience.
Was it kind of unique for Irma Bombeck to be there in the woods of Alaska?
I think it was. That was a long time ago, but she wore a fake pink fur coat, and she had gone to a couple other locations in Alaska.
Do you have any advice for cooks?
Oh, good ingredients, really fresh, good ingredients, and blending of flavors, and you really can't go wrong if you have good food to prepare from.
What inspired you to write the cookbook in itself?
I sort of compiled over all the years until, and I had this big book, and then one of the girls who had worked at the Saltery was a graduate in literature, and she decided she'd help me write the first draft, and I decided I wanted to have a cookbook for the Saltery for its 20th birthday, so that's what I did.
What is the Saltery?
The name?
Mm-hmm.
It's spelled S-A-L-T-R-Y, and if it was a salt, and it's kind of like after the word a saltery where you salted fish, and it's just shortened a little bit. And that was the main. Halibut Cove was full of herring salteries in the early days, 1911 to 1928, and then it is what it is now.
Do you have any favorite stories in the book?
I think my favorite story is the rowboat story about potlucks in Halibut Cove.
Can you go into that in just a little bit more detail, please?
Oh, it's just a narrative about how people get to parties, and it's about rowboats and people in a hurry and how their oars are sticking in every direction, and they're in a hurry to get there to share food and not get left out.
Halibut Cove must be a unique place to live.
It is very unique.
I've been talking with Marion Beck. She's the daughter of Clem and Diane Tillian. She's just come out with a new book called Salmon Patties and Rosehip Pie Cookbook, Art, Food, and the Coastal Life in Halibut Cove, Alaska. It's available on Epicenter Press. Marion, do you have anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I don't think so. I think you pretty much covered it.
Marion, thank you very much for being here with us.
You're welcome, and thanks for calling.
Ma chère mademoiselle. It is with deepest pride and greatest pleasure that we welcome you tonight. And now, we invite you to relax, let us pull up a chair, as the dining room proudly presents your dinner. Be our guest. Be our guest. Put our service to the test. Tie your napkin round your neck, sherry, and we provide the rest. Soup du jour, hot hors d'oeuvre, why, we only live to serve. Try the gray stuff, it's delicious. Don't believe me? Ask the dishes. They can sing, they can dance. After all, miss, this is France, and a dinner here is never second best. Go on, unfold your menu, take a glance, and then you'll be our guest. We our guest, be our guest.
Beef, bread, roux, cheese soufflé, pie and pudding
on flambé. We'll prepare and serve with flair a culinary cabaret. You're alone and you're scared, but the banquet's all prepared. No one's gloomy or complaining while the flatware's entertaining. We tell jokes, I do tricks with my fellow candlesticks.
Put it all in perfect taste that you can bear. Come on and lift your glass, you've won your own free pass.
Stressed, it's
fine dining, we suggest.
Be our guest, be our guest, be our guest.
Life is so unnerving for a servant who's not serving. He's not whole without a soul to wait upon. Ah, those good old days when we were useful. Suddenly those good old days are gone. 10 years we've been rusting, needing so much more than dusting, needing exercise, a chance to use our skills. Most days we just lay around the castle. Flabby, fat, and lazy, you walked in and oops-a-daisy!
It's a guest, thanks a lot, and I'll be blessed. Wife's important, thank the Lord, I've had the napkins freshly pressed. With this food, she'll want tea, and my dear, that's fine with me. While the cups do their sauce-shoeing, I'll be bubbling, I'll be brewing. I'll get warm, I've been hot, for the sake of that, I'll stop. And in that, we want the company and friends. We've got a lot to do. Is it one love or two? For you, I guess.
Be our guest.
Be our guest.
Be our guest. Be our guest. Be our guest. Come on, man. Don't you think that you sweet at anybody here? And we're a pet. It's your deal. It's your deal. Yes, indeed, we insist. While the candle lights to glow, we swear a thousand years in golden for my
course. One.
Put on your dancing shoes and put on a smile for this month's Barn Dance, Saturday, October 22nd, 7:30 p.m. at St. Anne's Parish Hall on 5th Street downtown. The hot old-time band Rumblefish will play live music, and Odette Edgar will teach and call conference square dances. As always, you don't need any experience or a partner. Discounts for students and seniors free for SAGA and JVs. Call 586-1787 for more information. Good times, great live music at the Barn Dance this Saturday.
Thank you.
And it's some of the music you'll be lucky enough to hear if you go to the Festival of Earth and Culture this coming up Saturday, October 29th at Centennial Hall. It's the New York Angel Dancers studio. And now to tell us a little bit more about the festival is Alexander Dolitsky. Alexander, thank you for coming into the station today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Hello. Oops, I'll turn on the right microphone this time. There you are. Hello, thank you for coming into the station today.
Yes, yeah. Hello, Jeff.
And hello again. So tell us about this, the fourth annual Festival of the Far North Culture.
Well, we started this festival, White Nights Festival of Russian Culture, about 4 years ago. And as you remember, you were our master of the ceremony. And the community in Juneau helped to organize this event, you know, 4 years ago. So this is our fourth annual festival. Last year it was in Sitka, and we had about 500 people in the audience who attended the event. It was in conjunction with Russian-American conference organized by the Park Service. And this year we come back to Juneau. And normally the White Nights Festival, we call this during the summertime. And, of course, now it's October, so we sort of changed the title, Living Wisdom of the Far North. But the format and the protocol of the festival, of the event, will be the same.
It's a little bit small, shorter, too.
Well, yeah, last time it was 8 hours. You know, we had more money, we had more artists. And so this time we just decided the most probably effective way of doing this event, about 1.5, 2 hours event without intermission.
And you wised up, you got a good MC this time.
Yeah, Bruce Botella, our mayor, will be a master of the ceremony during our event. Yeah.
This is happening on Saturday, October 29th at Centennial Hall from 4 o'clock until 7 p.m. And tell us what's going to be going on.
Well, we are going to have the first of all performance, New York Angel Dancers. I think there are coming about 12 dancers from Sitka. Sitnik is a wonderful instrumental ensemble, so they will perform with New York Angel Dancers. We have Kathleen Wayne for the first time, Juneau Opera. Well, she represents Juneau Opera. She will perform, I think, 3 or 4 pieces. I don't know exactly which one, you know, she will choose. With Tatiana Scott, she will accompany her. Tatiana Scott is from Sacramento, California, a wonderful musician who teaches in Sacramento music. And then Tatiana Scott will perform solo. And Steve Tata and Nancy Nash will conclude our event. Well, I don't know what Steve will perform, probably Rachmaninov or something Russian. And for the first time, we are going to have Tamara Semyonova, artist from St. Petersburg, and Lee Rust, artist from Victoria, Australia. It will be art exhibition that actually today will be displayed at Centennial Hall until the end of the month and during the event as well.
Tell me a little bit about the art, if you could, please.
Well, the art? The artwork is based on a book of Living Wisdom of the Far North, Tales and Legends from Chukotka and Alaska. There is about 50 illustrations. And I decided basically kind of to connect one and another. So Lee Rust is one of the best wildlife artists in the world. And I worked with him for 5 months, in about 5-6 months, feeding him his information. And he produced wonderful pieces. He kind of realist. Tamara Semyonova, she lives in St. Petersburg. She is a very accomplished artist, well-known artist in Russia. And she is more an abstract kind of type, you know, Marc Chagall, everything is flying, you know, this type. And Tamara Semyonova, she worked with the Hermitage Museum. So she used to work for the Institute of Arctic and Antarctic, so she knows the area. But they're quite different artists, and they interpreted the same story in a different way. So it's kind of interesting to contrast one and another. So in Centennial, one wall will be with Lee Rust prints that we mounted, and another wall will be with Tamara Semyonova. And I also framed 6 original pieces of Tamara Semyonova because, you know, and they look wonderful.
And these are on display now at Centennial Hall?
Well, you know, they're working now. Because Darren, you know, he puts them on the walls, and they will be until the end of October. And the original art, they will be displayed during the event.
Got some high-powered people coming. You've got Alaska State Senator Dennis Egan and also the Russian Deputy Consul General from Seattle.
Yeah, these are the people who contributed to Russian-American affairs for a long time. You know, Senator Egan, you know, he will make remarks, and he was last year in Sitka as well. You know, he, and the Bruce Botella will be our master of the ceremony, and Deputy Consul was here before for the first year when we just started, and he was last year in Sitka. So the event is sponsored by the Embassy of the Russian Federation and the Russian Consulate. So our format is, this is our format. We do art and music and dance, but also, you know, it has some, I would say, a socio-political aspect.
Mm-hmm. This is all happening on Saturday, the 29th of October at 4 o'clock until about 7 o'clock. And it's free, but donations are accepted as well?
Well, at the door. It's suggested donations. It's free because we received support from the Russian embassy, but also we received support from others in the community. Taco Smokery will donate some food. Alaska Brewing Company will make contribution. Alaska Lita basically, you know, prints us for free. Art Matters, you know, that were very sensitive to our work. And when they were framing, and Darren Peterson at Centennial Hall and Stephen, they work very hard to accommodate our needs.
Is there a website people can go to get more information?
Yeah, www.aksrc.org. It's Alaska Siberia Research Center website, and basically program is there are the flyers around the town. Juno Empire wrote one pre-write article, and another one will be coming out sometime soon with Capital City Weekly, so that, you know, we will let people know about this event.
Right, and this is the fourth annual festival. That's right.
Yeah, it's a fourth, and I'm sure we're already talking about the fifth, because next year will be 200th anniversary of Fort Ross in California, 1812 to 2012, and the Russian embassy and in California, they really want to celebrate this event, so I'm sure in Sitka we are going to organize a big event next year.
Can you tell us a little bit more about Fort Ross?
Well, Fort Ross was a Russian colony in California established in 1812, and I think it was sold to the Spaniards like 40, 50 years later. I don't remember exactly the date. But it was, and it's still a very important historic mark in California that I think that 2 years ago they wanted to close this place in California, and the Russian community, you know, they really lobbied, you know, to keep it open, and it's still open.
Right. The Living Wisdom of the Far North, the fourth annual Festival of Russian Culture, happening Saturday, October 29th at 4 o'clock until about 7 o'clock. It's free, but donations of $10 are requested to keep the thing going. Alexander Dolitsky, you want to add anything I might have forgotten to ask?
No, I just want to thank everyone who is supporting our event in June. We have a wonderful community, and we want to do something very special for the years to come. And it's a fourth annual event, and we would like to make this a permanent feature in our community between Sitka and June. We decided to alternate 1 year here and there.
All right, well, we started off with a little bit of music from the Newark Angel Dancers. We're going to conclude this part of the afternoon with a little bit of music from the Sitniks. Alexander, thank you for coming by the station today.
My pleasure.
This is Bird Note. Celebrity watchers follow Brad and Angelina. There was rather a fuss over the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. But the celebrities of the whooping crane world have to be the Lobstick family. Lobstick? The name comes from where the cranes nest, in the Lobstick Marshes just outside the Wood Buffalo National Park of North Central Canada. The Lobstick male, at 33, is the oldest whooping crane in the wild, whose age we know for certain. A pair of whooping cranes usually raises just one chick every other year. But Tom Stain of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service tells us the Lobsticks have raised 17 chicks in 29 years. Increasing the population of whooping cranes is slow going. Part of the challenge is that young cranes don't know instinctively where to migrate, so they follow their parents on the journey south. The family stays together through the winter, munching on tasty blue crabs at Aransas on the Gulf Coast of Texas. And the young often make the trip back to Canada with their parents in the spring, only then going off on their own. Healthy wetlands in Canada and in Texas are essential to the future of the endangered whooping crane. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Time is 3:33 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are here to talk about the Polaris House, Dorothy Green, the Executive Director, Greg Martini, a Unit Leader, and also Jan Gurdon, President of the Board. Thank you very much for coming to the station, everybody.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
First of all, what is the Polaris House for people who do not know?
Polaris House is an international clubhouse model program that works with adults with a history of mental illness. The whole mission of Polaris House is to help adults recover from mental illness. We believe that you can recover from mental illness, lead a productive, happy life, and return to work.
How long has it been around?
We were founded in 2002. By the National Alliance for Mental Illness here in Juneau. We were separated and became a freestanding clubhouse in July of 2008, and we were certified or accredited by the International Center for Clubhouse Development in July of 2008.
And you're located right across the street from the Sandpiper?
Yes, sir, right across the street from the Sandpiper.
How many members do you have?
We have about 100 active members that come in regularly every month.
Mm-hmm. What's the general atmosphere, and could you tell me a little bit about the clubhouse model?
The atmosphere is pleasant. People are usually greeted with a smile, or we're delighted to have you there, and we need everybody's help to help us run Polaris House. The clubhouse is for the members, and they help us with absolutely everything from payroll and bills to deciding what we have for lunch and helping cook it.
Some get toilet duty, too.
That's right. Some get to help clean.
Including
the director.
Yeah. We try to engage members to engage themselves in work order day, mm-hmm. which is a portion of the clubhouse.
You see a job, you volunteer to do the job, you ask if you need to do a job.
I'm talking with Dorothy Green, Greg Martini, and Jan Gurdon. Dorothy, tell us about being an executive director. What kind of duties do you have besides cooking and cleaning?
Well, generally the buck stops here job, but I get to a lot of the fundraising and grant writing and development, the seeing that the clubhouse stays true to the model. One reason we started the clubhouse here is because of how effective it is. It is a SAMHSA evidence best practice model program, and we hope it continues to do that way. And we've seen it be successful, and so we want it to stay true to that so we can help a lot more people get housed, stay housed, and return to work when they're ready.
Greg Martini, you're the unit director. Could you please tell me what the unit director does, and maybe a little bit about your background, too?
Well, my background is I got a lot of history in job coordinator, as a job coordinator and assistant production manager. in troubled spots in the state of Washington and California and Nevada. And I come up here to work in the food service program or service program.
You ran your own business, didn't you?
Huh?
Did you run your own business?
Yeah, in recycling, where I helped out a lot of homeless people in Sacramento, California, get them off the street and show them the skills and get them into doing something besides running around on the streets and drinking and doing drugs.
What does a unit leader do?
Well, in my unit, we're responsible for the food planning, meal preparation, janitorial services, providing supplies for the unit, cleaning supplies. We also work on housing. We're strong in housing. We're also working with the members in transitional employments, which is TEP, or try to find members who want to get involved in the transitional employment program, put them back out to work in the community, and train them, give them what they need. We do some supported employment. We do follow-ups on that. We do home visits, supported housing. We do follow-ups on that to make sure they're, if people on Section 8 are following the rules and the guidelines that they signed. We also help in culinary areas in the kitchen. We get people sign up for food handlers cards and stuff like that, and we issue them a food handlers card. We go online. We also do the Plato education system, where we teach people or administer GED courses online.
Sounds like you keep pretty busy.
Yeah, yeah. Is it Johnny on the spot?
He didn't talk much about, he mentioned housing. Housing probably is one of the things that's got it started quite a bit. We all know housing is difficult here in Juneau, and whether you have money or not have money, it's a cost. It takes a lot to keep housing and to get housing. And so there is about 68% of the members have stable housing, which is part of what we're trying to do is get everyone off the street. We have about 22% that are homeless, and then we have another 9% that we don't really know where they're living. They're probably camping out, couch surfing or whatever. And, of course, by them, if they don't have a place to live, at least coming to Blair's house, they get two meals. They get to end up being off the streets, keeps them out of the weather. It connects them to opportunities to find housing as well as jobs. So it builds on each other. Everything builds on itself.
Dorothy, I didn't get to talk about your background. You had 16 or 17 years as a teacher?
Yes, sir. I was a certified teacher, taught in public schools for about 17 years, and then I've been a case manager for about 10 years or so after that, and I've been a case manager here at Polaris House before I became the director.
I'd venture to say that working at a place like the Polaris House is not like your typical state office work. Why are you involved in such a noble mission?
I think that it's extremely rewarding. One of the, I think, really things that fuels me is the first time I helped a member who had been homeless for 15 years. He had not lived in a house in 15 years. Moving him into his first house was extremely rewarding. And I think seeing people be able to move from living homeless on the streets to being housed, and then even to returning to work. Our members have returned to work. We have about 25 people who have returned to work from our membership. And seeing the full gamut of that is just extremely rewarding.
Jen, how about you?
Well, I work for Catholic Community Services. I'm a family support specialist under Family Resource Center. But I actually have a degree in early childhood education, but I happen to have a son that was diagnosed autistic as a young child. And I, not that he has ever been homeless, but mother finding out many things, and you have children that are having mental health issues, you concerned about why and what's going to happen to them when they're adult when you're not around. And I think this is a way of me giving back for the community, supporting him for so many years.
Greg, how about you?
My mission is to try to engage a lot of members in to participate in like in work order day or things in areas where I see that they got skills and talents and try to encourage them to pursue them goals, right, and try to share knowledges with them and to teach and work side by side. So I'm directly with each member at the clubhouse every day that comes in to sign in. At one point or another, they're discussing some kind of situation that either helps them or enables them to pursue their goals.
Now, working at the Polaris House must put you in contact with people. There's a number of misconceptions about what goes on there. You want to talk about those, if you could, please?
Well, I think the most one of the biggest ones we've competed with is that we're a drop-in center. We're not a drop-in and run-out type of center. We really ask for a commitment from the members. And I think that if you look at the history, one of the worst thing you can do is if you're disabled and you're receiving SSI and you have mental illness, you suffer with major depression or other forms of mental illness, to sit at the house endlessly for hours by yourself is probably the worst thing you can do. So what we're about is getting people to come in to us and come in and visit and be active. And we're about helping people with their strengths. We're more interested in what you can do and what your strengths and what you want to do. And we will connect you up with helping us out in that way.
I want to add to that. I think that really and truly it is part of making individuals finding their own self-worth. We all have something to give. We may have our own individual challenges. Each of us do, and then people with mental illness have that too. They have a lot they can teach us and a lot that they can show us and a lot we can learn from them. And giving them that power or the encouragement to do that, that allows them to be able to do that, is what I think Polaris House does.
Greg, you have anything you want to chime in there?
Our strong suit is just engaging members to participate in learning things and trying to better themselves, a place that they feel that they can come and belong and feel a place where they're wanted off the streets, whether it be if they're homeless or people with alcohol fetal syndrome or something like that that suffer from mental illness, or people with children that are suffering from depression. Or we try to multitask with different diagnoses of behaviors, so we try to assist all these people, and we've got several staff, so they all take their turns at some of them. We try to make the place a warm and friendly environment, and try to represent that as well to the community.
Dorothy might want to tell you about the house next door a little bit that's helping get some of the members off the street.
We have a residence now for difficult-to-place individuals. All of them have been chronically homeless at one point or another, as well as, and mental illness is a major factor in why they're homeless. And we serve 4 people in the house, and it's been wonderful. We've been able to help some people get stable income. Many of them don't have stable income when they come in. We're able to help them get stable income and look at ways to either return to work or to find better housing, and it gets them off the street and into a warm, comfortable place to live.
Without an address, there's a lot of things you're not able to get. So it also helps the services to be placed and get in place because of the house gets them and being able to get the services connected to services mm-hmm. better.
When you're on the streets and you're homeless, you spend so much energy just surviving, mm-hmm. just figuring out where the next meal is going to be or how I'm going to stay warm tonight or dry, that finding permanent housing often isn't the first thing on the priority. It's finding food for today or finding a warm place for now. And the house gives people a chance to stop and begin to plan a future.
I'm talking to Dorothy Green, Executive Director of the Polaris House, also Greg Martini, a unit leader there, and Jan Gruten, President of the Board of Directors. If you'd like to know more about the Polaris House, they're having an open house tomorrow from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. You want to talk about the open house, please?
Yes, please come. Everybody's welcome. We'd love to show you Polaris House. We also have a silent auction and a hot dog sale. We've built a brand new mobile concession stand that you'll see about the community in the next year or two. So we'll be selling some hot dogs. Come and have a hot dog with us, visit Polaris House, and maybe bid on some of our silent auction items and see what we're about.
Do you have a phone number at all you want to share?
907-780-6775. We've asked you to not park across the street in the Sandpiper parking lot, but to park down the street is the state public parking lot, and if you could park there and walk across to Polaris House, it would be greatly appreciated.
And there's really some nice silent auction items. There's some arts and jewelry, and there's also some handmade cooked items, and some of the artwork's quite nice. And so come see them.
And these sales from these will help support the work at the Popularis House. How otherwise are you funded?
We are funded from donations from the community and from grants, primarily from the State of Alaska Division of Behavioral Health and the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority.
I've been talking to Dorothy Green and Greg Martini and Jan Gurdon from the Polaris House. Is there anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask?
I just want everybody to come out and visit with us tomorrow. And
our concession stands is called the North Star Cafe. We have four choices of different type hot dogs on the menu. One's called the Juno Dog, another one's called the Deputy Dog, and a McKinley Dog, and a Polaris Dog.
And it gets more and more layers, so you know it's got at least chili and cheese and onions on there. So
they all come with chips and soda pop.
How much do they run? How much are they?
Excuse me?
How much are they?
Okay, the Juno Dog is $5. The Deputy Dog is $6. McKinley Dog is $7. And the Polaris Dog is a basic hot dog, $2.50.
Mm-hmm. And that comes with a soda of your choice and
chips.
And that's at the Polaris House tomorrow from 10 o'clock until 2 in the afternoon?
Right.
All right, thank you for coming by.
All right, you're welcome.
Thank you for having us.
See you all tomorrow.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 17th of October, 2011. It was on this day, 1586, in battle against Spain over a small town in the Netherlands, the English poet Sir Philip Sidney died of his wounds. He was famous for his work published after his death, Astrophil and Stella, a sonnet cycle, and The Defense of Poesy, the first work of literary criticism in English. He was struck by a Spanish bullet in the thigh, stayed on his horse until he got back to the camp a mile away. Though weak from loss of blood himself, he passed his water bottle to another soldier and said, "Thy necessity is yet greater than mine." He died 26 days later at the age of 31. It was on this day, 1604, Johannes Kepler witnessed the last supernova observed in the Milky Way. He had figured out the laws of planetary motion. He knew the night sky, so he was surprised to see a very bright object in the western sky one night. Understand, this was before the invention of the telescope. All of his observations were made by the naked eye. Astronomers at the time thought they were witnessing the birth of a star, but a supernova is actually an explosion, that is, a star dying. Kepler lived in Prague. He began studying the supernova in earnest, recording his observations of it for over a year. Supernova have been seen in other galaxies, but this one, known as Kepler's supernova, or Kepler's star, is the last one observed in our galaxy, the Milky Way. It's the birthday of the playwright Arthur Miller, New York City, 1915, best known for his play Death of a Salesman, about Willie Loman, the struggling salesman, a character loosely based on Miller's uncle, Manny Newman. Miller also wrote The Crucible, a fictionalized account of the Salem witch trials of 1692. He wrote, "Poetry may seem an odd word for a witch hunt, but I saw there was something of the marvelous in the spectacle of a whole village, if not an entire province, whose imagination was captured by a vision of something that wasn't there." It's the birthday of the Syrian-American poet and author Mojit Kaf, born Damascus, 1967, came to this country as a small child. Grew up in New Jersey, studied at Rutgers, author of a book of poetry, Emails from Scheherazade, and a novel, The Girl in the Tangerine Scarf. And it's the birthday of George Mackey Brown, born 1921 in Stromness in the Orkney Islands, author of fiction, travel books about Orcadian culture and history, who said, "I believe in dedicated work rather than in inspiration. I believe writing to be a craft, like carpentry, plumbing, or baking. Here's a poem for today by Elizabeth Bishop entitled Dream. I see a postman everywhere vanishing in thin blue air, a mammoth letter in his hand, postmarked from a foreign land. The postman's uniform is blue, the letter is, of course, from you, and I'd be able to read, I hope, my own name on the envelope. But he has trouble with this letter, which constantly grows bigger and bigger, and over with a stare, he vanishes in blue, blue air. A poem by Elizabeth Bishop, Dream, from Edgar Allan Poe and the Jukebox, published by Ferrer, Strauss, and Giroux, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Novo Nordisk since 1923, innovative developer of diabetes treatments and delivery devices at novonordisk-us.com. And by The Great Leader, published by Grove Press, a black comic detective novel in the vein of No Country for Old Men, about a retired detective in a humorous and bold pursuit of a sinister cult leader, by Jim Harrison. Produced by Kathy Roach, written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The Juneau World Affairs Council presents Ambassador Edward Peck this Wednesday, October 19th at 5 p.m. in the studios of K2TV. His topic will be Neither Easy Nor Quick, Doing the Right Thing for Israel, Palestine, and America. After 32 years in the U.S. Foreign Service's Chief of Mission in Baghdad, Ambassador Peck is now President of Foreign Services International. Admission is free and is sponsored by GCI and Chatham Electric. That's October 19 at 5 p.m. at K2.
Time is 3:58 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTUO also broadcasts on these translators. In Valley and Knock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Ms. Davis listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9. An excursion inlet and icy strait here, KTUO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTUO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also online at www.ktuo.org. Tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with pianist Tatiana Scott, one of the performers at this month's Festival of Russian Culture. We'll also learn how high school students are preparing for careers with guests Debbie Banizak and Karen Smolin. That Writer's Almanac for Note Music and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, rain, low temperatures around 42 degrees. Forecast for Tuesday, more rain with high temperatures around 46 degrees. Tuesday night, rain to showers at low temperatures, 39 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain showers, high temperatures around 46 degrees. Anyway, next is All Things Considered. Don't forget live coverage of the Sitting Bureau Juneau Assembly meeting starts tonight at 7 o'clock. Thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon. Have a pleasant evening.